Right, so we're continuing to look at mission tonight. We've done a bit of a Bible overview as to looking at what mission is. We looked a bit last week at how we can, as a local congregation, how we think about mission, and I guess what in the future will be kind of Christchurch's mission, you know, how we'll share, you know, how we'll think about mission as a church. And it does require a lot of thought, not just as a one-off, but as we go, you know, where God's going to take us as a church, we don't know. Church is in many ways messy. We don't. God doesn't give us all the answers straight away, which is exciting. And this week we're going to be tonight we're going to be looking at personal mission. So I've kind of structured it in a kind of two parts. So the first part is looking at who we are, because I think that's important, the kind of foundation of our mission. And the second part is looking at what we say. The two are bound together. And I guess the reason for doing that is that it's really easy to think about, when we talk about mission and evangelism, to think it's just a list of techniques. You know, we just do this, this, and this, and then, you know, we'll be better evangelists and all the rest. But I think it needs to go far, far deeper than that. Far, far more important things to look at than just techniques, I think. So that's why we're going to do that, do it this way. So part one, who we are, do this part, we'll have a bit of a discussion. Then we'll do a bit of part two, have another discussion, and then we'll pray about our own mission, I guess, in our prayer times as well. So we said last week that we have a tendency as Christians to kind of see mission as like a separate activity, you know, a kind of bolt-on, an add-on to the rest of our Christian lives. It, you know, we do things like we do church meetings, we do giving, and we do evangelism, basically. We kind of compartmentalise mission as another activity that we do. But that's not how the Bible sees mission, as we'll see in a moment. Mission is never an add-on in the Bible. Mission in the Bible is Christians being Christians in every area of their lives, basically. I think that's the way Bible would define mission. And if you were to sum up Christianity in a few words, it would be something like, Jesus is Lord. He's the boss of our lives, and he's not just the Lord of our quiet times, our Sunday mornings, our Wednesday nights. He's Lord of all or nothing at all, basically. Tim Keller, who's a minister in New York, and he's been a minister in New York for quite a few, since 1989, they set up a church that's kind of reached thousands of people in quite a difficult place. And he said when he was a younger minister that he used to find it really easy. He said he was very good at getting his congregation to be really good sort of Sunday Christians, but he was bad at getting his church to be good 24/7 Christians. You know, he could encourage them to be more committed to church, to read their Bibles, but when it came to getting them to be kind of good Christian solicitors or good Christian actors or good Christian doctors, he felt that he failed. And it's quite an interesting sort of observation, really, that often we don't really pay enough attention to how we're supposed to be for the majority of our lives, which is kind of in our work lives, in our interaction with other people, etc. Romans chapter 12 says this, and it's in the notes. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So the Bible calls us to live all of our lives in worship of God, basically. Every area of our lives, every nook and cranny, if you like, is to be transformed by the gospel. So worship isn't just when we sing, although it is when we sing. It's how we are on a Monday morning at work. Tim Chester, who's written the Total Church book that I've recommended at the end, he calls this whole life discipleship, and I think that's a good way of putting it. Whole life discipleship. Jesus is Lord of everything. And in the passage it says three key things that I think help us kind of get started. The first thing it says is we're not to be conformed to this world. You know, if we know Jesus, we should be different from the world around us. Not in an arrogant, sort of condescending way, not looking down on people, but liberated from the desire to kind of, you know, earn money, to in order to please other people, the desire to kind of, you know, sort of suck the life out of relationships in order to make ourselves happy. We're liberated kind of from false gods, basically, as Christians, because the gospel has liberated us from them. So we need to live differently so that our message has meaning and it has integrity, and people can see that. So then we're called as well in the passage to be transformed by the renewal of our minds. And I think that means that we need to think Christianly about everything that we do, every area of our lives. And we'll come on to that a little bit more in a moment. The third thing it says is we're to discern the will of God. I don't think it means we're to kind of try and work out life decisions. I don't think this is what, it's not about who we should marry or what job we should do. That's not what it talks about most of the time in the Bible when it talks about God's will. It's referring to being, it's meaning, trying to get at being godly people, basically. God is far more bothered about our character than he is about anything else in our lives. In the Bible, God is most bothered about how much Christians are like Jesus or not. That's what he's really bothered about. So mission is who we are and not just what we do. That's the first point. It's not an add-on to our lives. The second thing is mission is about avoiding the sacred secular split. You may have heard us sort of talk about this a little bit before. A big problem we have to get past when we look at the subject of mission is that we have a kind of skewed view of how we spend most of our time in work and study. I mean, if you're at work, you probably spend between 40 and 50 hours of your lives at work. If you're a student, tiny bit less, maybe. But that's a massive amount of our lives, isn't it? It's a huge amount of our lives, a huge portion. The only thing we do more is sleep. Or do we? Do we sleep? I must sleep more than 40 hours a week. I didn't add it up. So the question is, how does mission relate to that massive amount of our lives? And I thought this would be a good kind of little bit of a case study to how we see Jesus being Lord of all of our lives. And we're going to be looking at work, I think, hopefully as a bit of a series on Wednesday nights after Easter. So we don't want to spend too much time on it tonight. But I think it's important to take a quick look at how we approach work, because I think it helps us understand how we should approach mission in general. It's a good kind of little test sort of scenario to look at. So how do we approach work? I mean, is work a necessary evil? Do we work just in order to pay Jonty's salary so he can do the kind of spiritual work of being the minister of the church? You know, do we work just to give missionaries money so that they can do the real work? Is God bothered about what we do for those 40, 50 hours a week? Is he bothered, or rather, isn't he just bothered about, you know, whether we get the opportunity to tell Billy about Jesus when we're having lunch or in the canteen or whatever? So God's view of mission isn't just seeing people saved and kind of zoomed off to heaven. God's plan is to redeem the world, to restore the culture that we're in. See, the Bible never divides secular work from spiritual work. It never makes that distinction. It's actually the church that's kind of introduced that divide. You know, before the Reformation of the church by Luther and Calvin and co, the teaching of the medieval church was that you were either called by God into spiritual work as like a monk or a nun or a priest, or else you had a job. Only the monks, the nuns and the priests were kind of called had a calling into their particular work, spiritual work. But of course, the reformers came along and they said that was rubbish. All believers are called priests in the Bible. In 1 Peter 2:9, and it's in the notes, it says, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light." So everyone has a calling, whether you're called to be a plumber or a bricklayer, a computer programmer, obviously not in the 1600s, a bit advanced, or a church leader. We're all doing spiritual work, if you like. There's no divide. So the idea of dividing work into the kind of spiritual and the secular comes more from people like Plato, which is the sort of cool dude in the notes with his kind of finger pointing in the air for some bizarre reason. So his philosophy has had a massive influence on culture, and it actually comes out when you hear politicians talk about their private lives as being nothing to do with their professional lives. Now, that's a divide of sorts, isn't it? That's kind of Plato kind of getting into the way they think. And his influence as well has had a massive impact on the way we think as Christians in the church. And in fact, I think it's still here quite a lot. So Plato taught, along with others, that basically the truly good things in the universe are the spiritual things. They're the really good things. Spiritual things, good. The material things, the things that we're made of, the matter, that's the bad stuff. So the soul was good, but it had to live in this horrible world full of matter. And all this is just kind of Plato's thoughts. He's absolutely nowhere in the Bible. But I wonder what you think. I wonder, a litmus test is perhaps to ask a question like this. Do you think it's more spiritual to be an evangelist or a gardener? And if you think it's more spiritual to be an evangelist than a gardener, you're probably more influenced by Plato than you think you are. But the problem with Plato's thinking is that it kind of sets God against culture. You know, it says that God is good, but the world is bad. But of course, you may have heard people even teach that in churches. You know, this is the devil's world and we've got to escape it and all the rest. But the Bible teaches pretty much the exact opposite. This is God's world. So when the serpent is in the garden in Genesis, he's in God's garden. That's the kind of point. He's the intruder. He shouldn't be there, in a sense. So rather than escape the world, God has called us to restore it in the Bible. In fact, that's the whole point of salvation. The whole point of being Christians, the whole point of everything, is to participate with God in restoring creation. You know, sin broke everything. It didn't just break us. It broke the created order. It broke everything in the universe. Death and sin aren't normal. They don't belong. They're the ones that don't fit in. They're aliens in God's world. And we're called to claim God's world back, if you like. So Chris Wright, who's a Christian writer, and he's an academic as well, says, we wrestle with making the gospel relevant to the world, but God is about the business of transforming the world to fit the shape of the gospel. You see how that's different? The exact opposite way around. I read a blog a while ago, and it was quite interesting. I even wrote to this guy and had a bit of a chat with him about it, because I used it in a talk. And he was in the States, and he had a home beer brewing ministry, sort of man after my own heart. And like Luther and other great reformers like him, he liked his beer in moderation. But members of his church had written to him, said they didn't like it, and they thought it was wrong. They thought you should abstain from alcohol and all the rest. And they quoted stories about people who had been affected by it. And he was really gracious in the way he replied. He was very kind to them. He empathised with them, but he said this. He said, God is all about redeeming things which he created good and man has corrupted. Not abstention, but redemption. When a Christian uses their mouth to speak lovingly to another person, they are doing God's work of redeeming an often abused good. When a married Christian couple has unselfish sex, they are doing God's work of redeeming an often abused good. When a Christian appreciates a pint of good beer, they are doing God's work of redeeming an often abused good. Not wanting to get into a debate about beer drinking, but I think the principle applies to pretty much every area of our lives. The point is that things like work, you know, our work exists to redeem everything that God's made that's been polluted by sin. So God is bothered about it. And obviously there's some work that has pretty much no good in it whatsoever. I can think of a few examples. But ultimately, our work is good in and of itself. That is part of our mission as Christians. It's our mission to work, to live all of our lives for the glory of God. So, for example, at work, being disciplined and godly in the way that we approach our jobs is a witness. And the work we do in and of itself glorifies God. So say, for example, even it applies even to the most menial kind of jobs. So if you work in a factory that makes screws, for example, to start with, at a very basic level, you're kind of imaging your creator. You're making, you're creating. But you're also serving as well. So your screws are used by a carpenter to hold his chairs together. And the carpenter sells his chairs to satisfied customers who enjoy sitting on them. So your work as a screw maker is glorifying God because you're serving others. You're part of this serving community. So in Genesis, God is a worker, a creator, a craftsman. You know, when we create in our lives, whatever we do, whether it's a report, a lesson plan, you know, making someone better when they're sick, writing a computer program, building an aeroplane, Rolls Royce people, building an aeroplane, whatever you do, we're reflecting the image of God in us. And also, it's our mission to think Christianly about what we do. So part of our mission as Christians is to really think carefully about what we do. to apply what we know about God and the Bible to every area of our lives, and to kind of help redeem it, to help buy it back. So this guy here, I was quoted in, there was a survey done about Christians and this kind of thing, and it did a lot of surveys and lots of people and their approach to kind of work and sort of life. And it, one of the guys is quoted in the report who used to work for UCCF apparently, and he said this: I could practically guarantee you that you could go into any Christian union in Britain and not find a single student who could give you a biblical perspective on the subject they're studying at degree level. That's kind of his analysis of where Christians are at. They kind of thought, but they didn't think about what they were doing for most of their lives. And Tim Chester says this: in the last 20 years, we've produced plenty of creative evangelistic materials, but little to help Christians connect their faith to the whole of life. A recent report blames this on the sacred secular divide, the pervasive belief that some things are important to God, such as church, prayer meetings, social action, alpha, but that other human activities are at best neutral: work, school, college, sports, the arts, leisure, rest, sleep. So a massive part of our mission as Christians is to see that we think about life, think Christianly about everything that we do. And that means thinking about how we can be, you know, Christian doctors, Christian students, Christian social workers, Christian anything. And it applies to an ethical level. You know, if you're in work, how do you respond when you're studying science to the fact that pretty much the whole underpinning of everything that you're studying is based on humanism? If you're a Christian actor, how do you respond when you're given a role to do method acting? Is that lying? Is it being deceitful? If you're a solicitor, how do you represent somebody who you're pretty sure is guilty? You know, how we apply what we know about the Bible and the gospel to our ethical decisions, but also just how we act, how we live. You know, how we model Jesus in our workplace. So we thought we'd have a bit of a discussion here. So the first, it should be on the, I'm trying to think where the question is, it's on a sort of page 3, this kind of blue box. There's sort of 4 questions. If you want to sort of spend 10, 15 minutes discussing these, read Romans 12, 1 and 2, discuss a few of those things, and then we'll move on to the next bit. Be able to carry on chatting. Different. Right, so moving on. So hopefully you had some good conversations. Part 2, I thought we would, if we looked at sort of who we are, part 2 is kind of what we say. And we've said that mission is about understanding what we do as part of our mission, who we are rather as part of our mission. But it's not the whole story, is it? The gospel does need to change the way we act, and it definitely needs to affect everything that we do, including work. But we also need to speak the gospel. We have to tell people about Jesus. So living Christianly and thinking Christianly about work must go hand in hand with talking about Jesus. What we say must have integrity, but we must say things. It doesn't mean that you should never make mistakes. We're just chatting about this, actually. Being godly in our work lives is often about, you know, how we behave after we mess up, whether we apologise and quickly or not. It's not about being perfect, but it's about being as godly as we can be, I think. But what happens if you kind of get the two out of balance? And I call this the danger of extremes. There's a tendency to think that evangelism and mission and witnessing is all about what you do. So if you've ever heard this quote, preach the gospel at all times and when necessary use words, allegedly has been spoken by Francis of Assisi. Not sure it was, but it's quoted as being. So that view is it's all about what you do rather than what you say. So as Christians, we do kind things. So we run soup kitchens, you know, we clean people's streets. And the idea is that people will eventually ask you why you're doing what you're doing, and you can start a conversation about Jesus. And it's a really noble aim, I think, but does tend to shy away from telling people the gospel. So the problem with this approach is that the gospel is words. It's good news. And it's hard to communicate news, isn't it, without words. In the Bible, words are pretty theologically important as well, aren't they? Creation happens through God speaking. And in John's Gospel, Jesus is described as the Word of God, In other words, he comes with the good news, and he is the good news as well. He is the word of God. And it's not that being godly isn't important, it's absolutely vital, but it's just that the gospel has to be spoken. People have to at least understand that Jesus is Lord. And the other extreme is it's all about what you say. So if we're no different from the people we work with and people we share our lives with, then our message is kind of empty and meaningless, isn't it? We've emptied the gospel of its power to change the world for the better. And when we're at work, it can also lead us to sort of looking for the next evangelistic opportunity. And it's normally true. If you think that you go to work just as a necessary evil to support missionaries and full-time Christians, if we spend the time that our bosses think that we're working telling our mates about Jesus, then we're not going to be a very good witness to our employers. And you can also see why Christians are so kind of annoying to work with as well. But worse than that, it leads to what I've called, or what I was thinking about this week, chat-up line evangelism. That we become obsessed with trying to see our friends converted, that we end up not really caring about our friends, and we become quite kind of shallow and tacky in the way we talk to our friends. And you'll see a little bit more about this in little discussion. It should come up as a couple of scenarios that come from Total Church that are really helpful. So we'll look at that in a minute. We need to hold both together, a godly life and speaking gospel words. So in the Bible, it's clear that God calls us to be godly people. It's everywhere. 1 Thessalonians 4, for example, aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. So what you do, being godly, is absolutely central. But the Bible also is very clear that we need to speak the gospel. So 1 Peter 3, but in your hearts honour Christ, the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defence to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. You know, godliness even comes into that. You know, how we speak is essential, isn't it? Vital. Both go hand in hand. The next point as well, I think this is stating the bleeding obvious, really. I've called this, how much do you love Jesus? You know, one of the reasons we didn't talk tonight about sort of finding a way of sharing your faith, you know, on a napkin and drawing out a gospel presentation, while that's good, it's not the most important thing about sharing the gospel isn't about our technique. It's important that we're clear and that we explain the gospel, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing in mission is really, really simple and inescapable. It's really, how much do we love Jesus is what it boils down to. If you're passionate about knowing Jesus, you'll want to share him. It's pretty much as simple as that. If you're not passionate about Jesus, you won't want to share him. And I think it really is that simple. Jonty mentioned a while back that there was a question and answer with a guy called Philip Jensen, who's sort of started a lot of churches in Sydney, and he came over here. And someone asked him how you get people more motivated to do mission. And he said the key was simply to get Christians praying. If they're not praying, they won't be sharing their faith. And in order to be better at sharing the gospel, we just need to be a more prayerful church. We need to love Jesus more. And that's why prayer is one of the most central and important things that we can do as a church. And we need to find lots of ways of doing that together. Without that, you know, our mission, without our love for Jesus, mission is pretty useless. Or we'll be pretty dead, or it just won't happen. And we need to be praying about each other in our work situations as well, in what we do with those 40, 50 hours of our week. The guys at the Crowded House Church in Sheffield put it like this. If someone was being sent as a missionary to a hostile context overseas, our attitude would be something like this. We would expect to pray often for them. We would expect progress in building relationships and sharing the gospel to be slow. We would be excited by small steps, a gospel conversation here, an opportunity to get to know someone there. We would thrive on regular updates from the front line. But the truth is that the lives of many Christians in work and play are just like the life of that far-flung missionary. They're lived out in tough environments where progress is often slow, and many factors make evangelism extremely difficult. The challenge is to make news from the staff canteen as valued as news from the overseas mission field. So that's exciting, isn't it? I mean, we're a room full of missionaries in this room, sharing the gospel in our context, where we are, in our lives, not just work, in every area of our lives. And the last point is, no man or woman is an evangelistic island. You just can't talk about personal mission without talking about the church. And I don't think the Bible lets you do it. I just don't think you can do it. See, what people crave more than anything else, really, ultimately, is genuine relationships, don't they? And we saw last week, this is, relationships are really the centre. Mission is the gospel community. God transforming communities by his word and then changing the world through those communities. So John says that in John, it says this, as Jesus is talking to the disciples, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. So our mission is to introduce people to our Christian community. And it's a really beautiful picture in the Total Church book. It kind of brings this idea that evangelism is like a three-stranded cord, you know, that are kind of intertwined. And when you put the strands together, you get a much stronger rope. And the three strands are building relationships, sharing the gospel, and introducing people to community. And all of those happen simultaneously, and all of them must happen together for the church to be strong. Building relationships, sharing the gospel, and introducing people to community. Three strands of a cord. And he puts it like this. He says, not all of us are eloquent or engaging. A bit harsh, but true. Not everyone can think on their feet. Some people are simply not good at speaking to strangers and forming new friendships. One of the practical benefits of the three-stranded model of evangelism is that it gives a role to all of God's people. By making evangelism a community project, it also takes seriously the sovereign work of the Holy Spirit in distributing a variety of gifts among his people. Everyone has a part to play: the new Christian, the introvert, the eloquent, the stuttering, the intelligent, the awkward. I may be the one who has begun to build a relationship with my neighbour, but in introducing him to community, it is someone else who shares the gospel with him. That is not only legitimate, it is positively thrilling. So it can be quite daunting, can't it, to be, you know, told to go and evangelise, to tell people about Jesus. But even our personal evangelism is a community project. And we need to think like that. So that kind of forms the basis for our second discussion. So there are a couple of scenarios on there. I want you to have a little discuss, read through, have a little think about. And then at the end, spend some time, I'll probably just say about quarter to, spend some time talking about your work and how you can pray for each other. And it'd be good to get a good solid bit of prayer in as well. So maybe 22 will do that. So we can spend a good, you know, 15 minutes praying for each other in our life situations and people we know, that kind of thing. So if you want to do that, that would be good. So have a look at those discussion scenarios.